WKNR presents
the Keter13.com podcast.
Welcome to the January 22nd edition of the Keter 13 podcast. I'm Scott Westerman, and on this week's program, The Sun Sets on the Shannon Empire, a podcast dedicated to cover tunes and a conversation with reporter and author Susan Whittle. That's all ahead on this week's Keter podcast.
Motor City Music.
Well, the laryngitis is back this week. It must be this particularly schizophrenic Iowa weather, but I have been in and out of colds and coughs since October. So I'm dispensing with the showbiz delivery for at least a portion of the program, and we'll take a more mellow approach this week. In the news, Detroit radio legend Tom Shannon announced his retirement from the Buffalo station where he's worked since the mid-90s. Tom was on the air in the Motor City off and on from the mid-60s and again in the 80s, mostly at the station that made him famous, CKLW, Keener's bitter rival. We'll have an air check with Tom and Rick Dees from 1976 on CK a bit later. And our podcast pick will really resonate with some of you. It's a program called Coverville, which features nothing but cover versions of rock hits. I'll have a Skype conversation with the host of Coverville, Brian Ibbett. Jim Heddle provides us with an interesting Keener cover when he dips into the vault, too. But first, a new feature on the Keener podcast. We'll be talking each week with our good friend Susan Whittle, reporter and media writer for the Detroit News. Like many Keener fans, Susan came of age during WKNR's prime, wrote for the legendary Cream magazine, and is the author of the bestseller, The Women of Motown, which is still available from Amazon.com. She joins us by phone from the Motor City. So we started off the show talking about Tom Shannon's upcoming retirement, and I think you and I spent some time with him at one of Art Volo's birthday parties. And even after all these years, he still made quite an impression.
And you know what? Girls still remember him as being this cute guy. I was talking to another reporter, not today in reference to this, but some other time. And Sue Pollock at the news, she's maybe a year older than me. And I just mentioned, do you remember Tom Shannon? And she goes, are you kidding? The sun never sets on the Shannon Empire.
Yeah.
Oh, he was cute. Girls thought he was cute even if they just heard his voice. That was a great gift that a radio guy would have.
So what do you think about the WXDX switch?
Gosh, it's good to see those grand, that wonderful frequency that took us through teenagehood. You know, it's kind of been floundering the last 2 years, and it's good to see at least something viable maybe on the airwaves. Because I think it being the only progressive / liberal talk in this town, that's got a good shot. At least it'll set it apart from other AMs. So there's potential there. If they can't be playing Keener, then okay, this will do.
Yeah.
I mean, Keener would be better.
Well, you told me a story on IM the other night about talking to a class of kids.
Yeah.
How old were they?
They were 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. So I think that's 9, 10, and 11, and that was the experience I had with them. I fully expected to just sort of be a boring adult to them, and I was trying desperately to think of younger musicians I had interviewed. And Kid Rock was about the extent of it, and that was big. That was huge. Kid Rock, man. But when they asked me who else I'd met, I decided to be honest, and, you know, I said, most of these people are going to impress your parents. And I said, I've met several of the Beatles. And they went, ooh, ooh. And I said, the Rolling Stones. And I said, oh. And then when I said Led Zeppelin, this little boy in the front row just about had a fit. He's like, Led Zeppelin, man. I said, that was amazing. You know Led Zeppelin? Because think of a child who's been on Earth, and I figure he was on my younger end, 9 or 10 years. It hasn't had that much time, and they don't play Led Zeppelin that much on the radio like they did 10, 20 years ago. So that's just amazing to me. And then there'd be the oddball little, then they started raising their hands, and the oddball little requests, like one guy would say, have you ever met Don McLean? I go, where did that come from? Don McLean? And then this other girl and said, well, what about oldies artists? Have you ever met any oldies artists? And I said, don't you consider the people I'm talking about oldies to you? I mean, Beatles, Stones, they're kind of oldies now. And she goes, no, I mean real oldies. I said, real oldies? I'm debating with a 10-year-old about real oldies. I said, what do you mean by real oldies? She said, well, like Little Richard.
Wow.
I said, Little Richard, no. No, I was born in the decade that he was popular.
Why do you think it is that these kids are so aware of artists from our era?
Well, I think, obviously they couldn't have heard them that much, but when they do hear music like that, like the Beatles, it really does hold up. Kind of the way the better 50s music that I heard when I was 12, 13, 14, and I was hearing it in the 60s as oldies. What would that have been? WHND back
yep,
then?
Yep, that would have been Honey Radio. Yep.
Yeah, I was listening to Honey Radio as a teen and just fascinated. Well, they're hearing stuff like that, and it's really registering with their, you know, young, unformed brains that are so much quicker than ours. And they just know good stuff. Plus, their parents are playing them a lot of stuff, too. A lot of them admitted that their parents had turned them on to this or that, and that's no longer uncool. In a way.
Of course, in our era, just having an FM radio in the car was cool.
I'm sure you could beat me on this. We didn't have a color TV till, God knows, I think, till I went away to college.
Back then, you know, the majority of the stuff was still in black and white. I would watch the George Perrault show just because the film portion of it was in color.
That was the most boring show. God bless you, George, but oh my God. Just no one under the age of 40 could conceive of this, but an old guy sitting in an armchair showing films of his travels around the world.
Yeah.
It was just horrible.
I might have mentioned to you about the Good Life Television Network. It's one of these new cable channels. And they're aiming right at the 50 to 65 demographic, and they're playing all the old black and white Man from U.N.C.L.E., Surfside 6, 77 Sunset Strip, Gallant Men, Combat, all of that stuff.
They probably aim at it. 50s or 60-year-olds, but I bet they're going to get a lot of interested kids and younger people.
Well, it's interesting to me how some of those shows wear a little bit better than others.
Do they? Yeah. The
early Man from U.N.C.L.E. still are enjoyable to me, but...
Yeah, I could see how 77 Sunset Strip probably wouldn't hold up as well, but one of my all-time favorites would be Route 66. I know that still holds up because I just saw it a few years ago. But you know, when you're mentioning color TV shows, I remember my grandfather did have a color TV. He was like sort of a techno freak, and he would have loved satellite radio, but he had a shortwave radio, he had all this cool stuff, and he got the first color TV I remember. But we would go over there, and literally whatever was in the book as being color that night, that's what you'd watch. You know, it didn't matter how horrible it was. You'd look in TV Guide, and we'd see the color icon. That's it. Gotta watch it.
One of the stories you wrote last year that got some national exposure was about Theron getting fired at WEMU in Ypsilanti for talking up the Iraq War. Last week we reported that he had been canned again at Clear Channel's Ann Arbor station. Have you heard if he's landed anywhere?
I've got breaking news. He landed on WAAM in your hometown of Ann Arbor.
Wow. What's his shift?
He's on Sunday nights again. Customary Sunday night, and I think it's 8 to midnight. Yeah, 4 hours live.
I wonder if he'll kick off the show with the trunk of my Cadillac.
That would be great. He's going to start January 30th, that Sunday.
For those who haven't read your piece on the Motor City Music Conference in the news, explain what that event is all about.
Well, Detroit's has never had a South by Southwest type music conference, which is amazing considering how many different kinds of music there are here and for how long and how many famous musicians, et cetera, came from here. And I'm sure someone at some point tried to do it, but this time the people trying to do it and that are going to are pretty heavy duty. Amir Deva is one of the partners, and he basically was the big promoter in Detroit until he sold out the Clear Channel, as everybody else did a couple years ago. So he had opened up a bar, Smalls and Hamtramck, that's now the trendy place. And I think he wanted a new challenge, so he partnered with a woman named Dana Forrester, who manages bands and basically gets them onto record labels and stuff like that. And Dana says that somebody in the industry had told her, well, you know, what you really need in Detroit is some kind of showcase event like South by Southwest. That'll save you a lot of time and money, because then we can just come in and see these bands and you don't have to be bringing them out to us all the time or having people come in, A&R people. So this kind of conference, it's got several, you know, several reasons for being. One of them is exposing new acts. And, yeah, having industry people come in and look at them and maybe sign them. But also, like South by Southwest, there will be panel discussions that are semi-structured and on many different topics relating to Detroit, Detroit music, Detroit radio, that kind of thing. So that's fascinating to me, since I took part in a panel down at South by Southwest one time on Cream Magazine, so I know how it can be fun. It's like a giant trade show for music. In this case, there would be a Detroit music slant, so that would be fun.
And you wrote that there will be over 400 bands performing in 40 different venues. What are the dates?
And it's April 20th through 24th.
Susan Woodall from the Detroit News. And you know, if you put her name into Google, you get over 1,600 entries. This was fun. Let's do it again.
This is great.
And now, a trip to the Shannon Empire.
WKNR Music Now!
Tom Shannon started his Detroit radio career in 1964, across the river at CKLW. He was the evening guy and hung in there during the years when Keener ruled the roost, and saw CK's rise to Detroit dominance before leaving in 1969. But he came back to the Big 8 again and again. His final stint was a brief fling in 1990. For the last several years, he's been on the air at WHTT in Buffalo, where he began his career exactly 50 years ago. Our Tom Shannon air check this week comes from RealRadio.com. It's a 1976 morning show in the midst of the disco craze when Rick Dees invaded and nearly took over the studio.
You don't have to be a star to be. I tell you what, you have the different. You don't have to be a star to be in my show. I'm going to turn your microphone on.
Right, there you go, Tom. Good to be here on CKLW. I crossed into Canada and thought I'd start talking like this. This here is Lester Roadhog Dees. Mr. Rick Dees, and all them ducks and idiots are going to be here on CKLW.
All right.
What's that? I'll tell you what happened. I'm sorry we're just a little late, just a little after 7, I noticed there. And we was coming down that big interstate, and every so often they have them signs that say clean restrooms ahead. We must have cleaned 200 restrooms on the way here. Hey, Mr. Dean, you want to come in there? Let me in there, will you please?
Tom, it is good to be here.
Rick, nice to welcome you.
Lester Roadhog precedes me wherever I go.
He's amazing. What's that group he's got? He always has that group he's trying to present.
Statler Brothers.
The Statler Brothers.
Statler Brothers, yes.
That's the ones, by God. Rick Dees will be with us in just a second. Let me check out a couple of things for you. 705 Farmer Jack Saving Time. You tell a friend about the savings this week on a quart carton of Farm Aid half and half. That's tough to say. It's just 47 cents at Farmer Jack's.
There she sat and faced dinner with a smile.
It's available at all federal department stores.
I'm Shannon, CKLW.
Well, then and I, this is Sammy Soul from the Rick Dees cast. It is on CKLW. I got my Rolls Royce parked in the front lawn outside. You can tell it's mine. It's the only one with a watermelon for a hood ornament.
Sam and Dave and Soul Man, it's 9 minutes after 7 from CKLW. This is Tom Shannon with our special guest this morning, Rick Dees, who is seated there with his kid. Yes, come in.
Somebody's at the door. Doggone it. I told you people to stay outside. I'm on CKLW this morning.
Tom, I do apologize.
It's all right. Bring him in.
I do. This Elvis. Elvis is here.
My
good
gosh.
Gracious. He wanted to see JoJo.
Want me a jelly donut? Thank you, everybody, so very much. It's Elvis Presley. I came here with my good friend, Rick Dees. I won't say I'm going in the hospital here in Detroit real soon to have my hips lifted. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, let's go upstairs to JoJo in the Big 8 traffic copter and we'll see if you're as knocked out as we all are. JoJo!
What's happening,
JoJo?
Yes, I don't think anybody has to do this.
What's happening, JoJo?
Good morning, Rick. Good morning, Tom. Good morning,
Elvis.
Everybody.
JoJo, you're going to run to Elvis Presley.
Oh, and good morning, Elvis. I'm sorry. I didn't
JoJo,
want to slight you.
If I told you you had a beautiful body, would you hold it against me? Thank you.
I don't think I'm used to this at this hour of the morning.
You get used to it, baby. All the girls get used to it real fast.
How's everybody doing down there?
Hungover. Can't you tell?
All I can say is it's a good... I'm glad I don't drink. I can't imagine what it must be like on a morning after.
Was that Coca-Cola you had in your hand or something?
It was Coca-Cola the entire night. Hey,
come on in. 14 no, after 7 o'clock.
This is Roger Pinsky.
You like that name.
Better known as CB Sissy. Hi, JoJo. Hi, everybody. What's happening?
Come on, would you get on? That was CB Sissy. And Tom, it is... The station really sounds great. It really does.
Well, you can hear it in your teeth if you got the right amount of metal in there.
CKLW.
Yeah.
It sounds so like Lorne. Every one of the jocks sounds like Lorne Green.
They all have great pipes. I'm the only one that has the lighter voice.
I don't understand, but you look like a big guy. And your voice just kind of pierces right through the mark.
Remember this one, though?
The ever boss Diana Ross on CKLW. That's where I stayed last night.
He hit the cue, y'all. See you in a bit. Memories out of the past. Diana Ross, the Supremes, and a love child. It is now 7 minutes before 8 o'clock at CKLW. Our special guest this morning, Rick Dees, and the cast of Idiots, right?
Right.
That's Tom Shannon with Rick Dees on CKLW in 1976. Tom announced his retirement from broadcasting this week. He'll hang up the headphones in March.
Podcast Fix.
And now, our Podcast Pick of the Week. It's an all-music program totally dedicated to cover versions of classic rock and roll. It's the brainchild of Colorado native Brian Ibbett, who grew up listening to KIMN, Denver's version of Keener 13. Coverville.com is one of Podcast Alley's top 10, and Brian surrounds his music with artist information and commentary that's as good or better than anything on the radio. We asked Brian how he happened to become one of podcasting's first disc jockeys.
Well, I don't know if I'm the first, because, Adam Curry was playing music on his show long before I started mine. Really, you know, I got into it hearing his, I can't remember, I think it was like Fark.com or some other website that mentioned what he was doing, and I thought, oh, that sounds cool. And at the time, I didn't even realize it was the same Adam Curry that I'd grown up watching on MTV. And unrelated, but right about that same time, I kind of said, you know, I could so easily do this sort of thing, and it would be the show that I've always wanted to do. I mean, after hearing Adam Curry's show a little, I finally said, well, God, you know, this could be the thing I've wanted to do. I could actually do the show I've always wanted to do, which was a cover show. I love hearing new and different versions of songs, of course, as long as they're good. And then the rest is history.
When did the first Coverville debut?
Let's see. It was the end of September. So October, November, December. I guess actually just a little over 3 months ago.
Where do you get your music?
Well, I have a huge library of CDs. I've kind of a collector of music, especially probably the range or the realm that I probably collect the most is Britpop. Favorite bands are groups like Squeeze and The Beautiful South and Crowded House, which I know is New Zealand. But I'm definitely a collector of music and a collector of CDs. I have about 2,500 in a special room that we actually made when we redid our basement. That we filled up one entire wall of CDs, and I just pull from there, as well as going to iTunes and picking up the occasional CD from Amazon.
And how did you prepare for that very first Coverville podcast?
The first one, you know, I'd been thinking about it for so long that I really just picked some of my favorite bands. In this case, it was a guy from California named Jason Faulkner, and kind of the bands that he evolved through, Jellyfish and an electronica group called the Moog Cookbook. Early, maybe about a month or a couple months before the show, I actually put together a mix CD of all the tracks that from the different bands that he'd been in, and realized that a lot of them were covers. And so when I decided I was going to do my first show, I thought, well, geez, I'm just going to use a lot of the tracks that I made from or that I pulled into that mix disc, and worked out very well.
Broadcasters and webcasters alike are all licensed by organizations that distribute copyright royalties to composers. You're one of the first podcasters to have negotiated a license with ASCAP and BMI. How did that happen?
Well, I have to admit, I mean, I was a little nervous those first couple weeks of doing this, because I knew that there had to be some legal ramifications. What I was doing certainly wasn't that dissimilar from the stuff that the RIA was getting upset with the file sharing. And it's still certainly not the entire piece of the puzzle. The ASCAP and BMI licenses are certainly the first step, and absolutely the right step to start off with, because it gets money into the hands of the great musicians and stuff that have put together the music that that I'm playing on my show. They get royalties from ASCAP and BMI. Now, the third kind of piece to the puzzle is the RIAA, and I'm in process of actually talking to a representative from Sound Exchange, which is going to be the branch of the RIA that deals with new media like this. And I figured, you know, better me step up and talk to him before he comes out to talk to me.
Take us through the production of a typical Coverville podcast.
Sure. Well, actually, I just recorded one tonight. I do a couple different kinds of shows. One is an all-request show that I usually do on Sundays. And then on Thursday nights, I try and do some sort of theme show. And tonight happened to be a Bobby Darin show. So what I do is probably the day or a couple days before I record the show, I put together all the tracks that I think I want to play, get them all into an iTunes playlist, and just kind of listen to them, usually while I'm at work, just kind of listen through the songs that I want to play, strip out any that I don't think are good enough, or that I don't think will fit the theme of the show. And then I spent about a half an hour of prep where I go through each track and set the volume of it, do a little research. I've got a great library of books here all about rock and roll music and the history of rock and roll and new bands and old bands. And I try and do a little bit of research on both the New Versions group and the Original Versions group, maybe, you know, when it was recorded or if there's any interesting trivia about that. And then I just start recording.
So how many hours from start to finish?
Probably, let's see, a half an hour of prep, half an hour to record the show, and then about an hour, fortunately an unattended hour, for me to convert the show from AIFF to MP3 and upload it to my server. I've got a pretty slow connection to the server when it comes to uploading a large file. So it takes about 35 minutes to upload a show to the server.
What is your day job?
Absolutely nothing related to what I do here. The day job is hard to describe. I'm an operations specialist is my official title, but I work for a small software company. So I do everything from customer support to designing our website to programming our hold music. anything that needs to be done, I kind of step in and do. I've got the bottom feeder position at the company, or the title that lends itself most to that, so I kind of have to step in and do a lot of different things.
Do you listen to terrestrial radio?
Probably the closest thing that comes to mind is a station out of Boulder called KBCO. They certainly seem to me to be one of the last fun and somewhat free-form radio stations. I mean, they're still owned by either Clear Channel or Intercom or AM/FM. I'm not sure which corporation owns them, but they still seem like they play a lot of what they enjoy and what they want to play. They hire DJs that definitely love the music. They seem to love the music that they play, and a lot of the DJs have been with them for several years. The other station, unfortunately, is one that's no longer with us, And it was a satellite radio station. I had XM for a couple of years, and actually gave it up when I found that I was listening to podcasts more than I was listening to XM. But they had a station on there called Special X that was absolutely, completely freeform. They'd have 2 hours of surf music that was interspersed with a Dennis drill going off between tracks. They had they actually had a cover show on there for 2 hours a week called, God, what was it called? It was like music that gives you a burning in your esophagus, if I remember correctly.
That's great.
And they would focus a lot more on the worst covers of all time than the good covers. But whenever it was on, I tried to make sure that I was somewhere where I could listen to it.
What do you know about the typical Coverville listener?
I know that they're consistent about what they like and what they recommend. I get easily half a dozen, maybe a dozen emails a day from listeners who have songs they recommend, and a lot of times they're already in my library, so I can grab them to play in the next show. God, I don't know if there is a typical Coverville listener. I have found that there are people out there who tell me that they hate cover music, and I rattle off a few really famous songs that are actually covers, and they don't realize that some of the songs that they've, you know, considered some of their favorites are actually cover versions or cover songs.
Perhaps you heard us mention a couple of weeks ago on the Keener podcast about the Russian site that has 250 cover versions of House of the Rising Sun.
I had heard that Yesterday by the Beatles was the most covered song ever, but after seeing that list, I'm starting to wonder if maybe House of the Rising Sun has toppled it.
Has anyone ever asked you about advertising on Coverville?
I get quite a few people who ask if I can promote their stuff on my site or do some sort of business. For right now, I really don't want to load up my podcast with advertisements. I definitely want it to be products that I support and that I believe in, like the iPod or X guys who are doing all the tsunami relief donations right now, which I think is just a great cause. I believe in their product. I mean, of course, it's a podcast aggregator. How can I not believe in that? You know, things like mortgage advertisements, you know, there's a point at which my podcast would start to sound like spam if I took up some of these advertisers on their offers.
How many listeners do you think Coverville has?
Boy, last time I looked, I think the most downloaded show I had was upwards of 3,600 times, 3,700 times. And I don't know if that's people listening to it on the web, like if they, instead of doing it and playing it multiple times on their computer, if they're sitting at work and they link to my site and play a favorite show every day. But I get, I think, 3,200 unique visitors to the site every day, and which could be podcast aggregators. It could be actual visitors. Hey, you know, 4,000 subscribers, I'll take it. I'm definitely happy with that.
The Keener Podcast is a weekly production. Adam Curry is on almost every day of the week. How many times a week do you produce Coverville?
I do three. I do the Sunday, what's turned into the all request, just so I have a place to play all the things that people are requesting. A Tuesday night show, which where I get to kind of pick and play what I want to play. And then the Thursday night show where I go with a theme and either do a bunch of songs by one artist or a bunch of songs that all have a kind of a common theme to them.
The podcasting concept is really less than 6 months old. How do you think it will evolve over the next couple of years?
I think we're going to start to see a lot more professional organizations producing podcasts, a lot more radio stations, possibly more TV stations turning their newscasts into podcasts, or maybe even coming up with some original content. I mean, right now is the time for individual startup podcasters, the people like me doing this out of their basement, to get out there and do this thing and develop an audience, because these slicker programs are going to come in probably before too long and be heavy competition for us.
What podcast do you listen to?
You know, I started off kind of listening to the stuff that Adam Curry was recommending on his show, and I still do pick up the occasional show from him. I think, of course, his show, I listen to the Daily Source Code. I think that's kind of the common denominator that brings all podcasters together. I also listened to a really short but fantastic show called Today's Podcast, which is like a word or quote of the day. You know those little word of the day calendars you can get? I listened to Radio Clash out of England, which is a show all about mashups, which I think is fantastic. Useful Sounds, a woman in Germany produces that, and if nothing else, I just love the sound of her voice. And that's a great thing about podcasting is you can hear all these different accents and languages from around the world. It's not just listening to people with the same Midwestern accent that I might have, or people from the South, or people from Canada. It's, you know, you're here to, you get to hear very strong accents and very strong different languages, which is really cool to hear.
Brian, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, and good luck with Coverville.
I appreciate you having me on the show. I mean, I have to admit, I listened to King of 13 first time today, but it really took me back to all those great AM radio stations that that I grew up listening to. And it's also kind of fun to talk for half an hour instead of playing music for half an hour and just talking a minute or two between each song.
That's Brian Ibbett, the host of Coverville, an all music podcast that features cover versions of some of rock and roll's greatest hits. And now let's go back into the vault with Jim Heddle.
Oops. Sonny Sigler was a Philadelphia native who launched his recording career in 1959. He didn't have a hit until the summer of 1967, with this medley of two songs first made famous in the 50s by Shirley and Lee. It's Let the Good Times Roll and Feel So Good.
Come on, baby, let the good times roll. Come on, baby, let me feel your soul. Come on, baby, let the good times roll. Roll all night long. Come on, baby, yeah, this is it. This ain't something I'm just painting.
Jim Heddle's Coverville special from the vault this week is Bunny Sigler with his redo of the classic Let the Good Times Roll. And that's this week's spare Keener13.com podcast. Visit KeenerPodcast.com for a complete link list from this week's show and for a complete archive of every Keener podcast. Special thanks to Jim Heddle for bringing us his weekly trip into the vault, for Brian Ibbett for taking us on a tour of Coverville, and to our special guest, Detroit news reporter and media observer, Susan Whittall. And that's how the world looks through the rose-colored glasses we wear every time we think of our favorite Detroit 60s radio station. You can find everything Keener right now on the web at www.keener13.com. That's KEENER13.com. Grab the XML file off of the site and plug it into your favorite podcast aggregator, and you'll never miss a show. Thanks to Jonathan Wolford at Jam Creative Productions for allowing us to use the original Pam's Keener jingles, and to Ken R. at KenR.com for preserving radio jingles for collectors around the world. We're back again next week with more Keener memories. We'll leave you with a Keener double shot, the original and the cover version from the 2003 Woodward Dream Cruise broadcast. I'm Scott Westerman. Thanks for listening.
W-K-N-R.
Here's another Keener double shot, a song that hit the charts on two different occasions by two different artists. In the fall of 1966, the New York band Left Banke borrowed a bit of the British sound and spent 3 weeks in the WKNR Music Guide with Walk Away Renee. 15 months later, almost to the day, the Four Tops began a Keener chart run with their note-for-note recreation. Let's hear them both in this Keener double shot.
And when I see the silence, voice one way, the love we used to pass by every day. Just walk away, Renee. You want to follow you back home. The empty sidewalk.
From deep inside the tears I'm forced to cry.